Welcome back to The Takeaway. I'm Arun Roth in for Tanzina Vega. We began this hour with a look at a systemic failure by Southern Baptist churches to address a pattern of sexual assault and violence by hundreds of perpetrators. We turn now to another unfortunately familiar story, sexual abuse within the Catholic Church. For years, the conversation around sexual abuse by Catholic clergymen has focused on the abuse of children by priests and bishops. But last week, Pope Francis acknowledged publicly for the first time that nuns have also been victimized. Reports have surfaced around the world in recent years of nuns being assaulted by priests. The Vatican Women's magazine last week wrote that some nuns were forced to have abortions after being raped, and that nuns have resisted coming forward about their abuse for fear of retaliation by the church.
Sisters would be very ashamed to talk about that and bring it into the light. So I believe it was there, and I believe it was undercover, in darkness and in secrecy.
Mary Dispenza was a nun in the 1960s and 70s and continued to work for the church for years after leaving the order. Today, Mary is the national leader of Survivors Network of Those Abused by Priests, or SNAP, and is the nun abuse contact for the organization. She is a survivor of rape by a priest when she was 7 years old at her Catholic elementary school. And she was also abused by a nun when she was a young nun in training herself.
I don't remember conversation before or after. I only remember that she took my face in her two hands and kissed me all over my face. And then I just remember leaving. I felt the same way I felt as a child. I felt lost. I felt abandoned. I felt confused. I felt alone.
I spoke with Mary about the atmosphere and power dynamics in the church that led to her own abuse and that of so many others at the hands of both priests and nuns. She began by telling me about a letter that a nun posted to her Survivors Network website just a few days ago. And we need to let you know that this conversation contains graphic depictions of sexual assault.
It's about the abuse of sisters in her order at that time, which was called the Minor of Mary Immaculate. And it talks about her own psychological, emotional, and nearly sexual abuse that caused her to enter the hospital while she was in the convent. But she witnessed how the nuns covered up with a bishop and tolerated and allowed sexual assault of her sisters by other sisters, benefactors in the order. Alcoholism was tolerated and severe punishments were given, like beating, starving, and imprisonment. The church allowed this for years. She reported it to the diocese in 2004 and said the diocese said there was nothing they could do. She also says there was racism in the religious order when an African-American sister would be called a black dog by her superior. There was a death of an Italian sister who was imprisoned and not allowed to see her family or get a medical attention. Another nearly died. And then she says, how it affected me. I have autoimmune disorder and PTSD and anxiety. I cannot attend Mass without physical complications or panic attacks. Have I given up? No. It's time to stop the silence and speak the truth and let the healing begin.
That is a horrendous account. One thing that I wonder, and it might sound naive, but you'd think with one of the advantages of having a hierarchy in a place like the church is that you would have recourse to a higher authority. That if there is a priest who was abusive, you should be able to use the hierarchy to address that. But it doesn't work like that, I guess.
No, it's very sad. There are many priests, bishops, they're all somewhat implicated in the issue of priest abuse, clergy abuse, abuse of children and nuns, because they're complicit in their secrecy and their silence. They're going to maintain the silence to protect each other. My experience has been when survivors have turned to the church, so to speak, or nuns have returned who were abused, turned to their superiors, they get a deaf ear.
Can you talk a bit about that, the power dynamic, how that played out in your own experience with the church.
Yes, I can. And with my child abuse at age 7, the way the power dynamic affected me or impacted my life at that early age was a priest, of course, violated me. And already at age 7, I knew that the priest was God, God's manifestation on earth. And I also knew that what happened was bad and wrong, even though I was just 7. And so because of that power dynamic, I felt I had to keep it a secret. It caused me to simply leave my abuse behind and go on as if it didn't happen.
So Mary, if you could you tell us what happened with that priest when you were 7?
Yes. Well, my mom, she worked in the parish office. So one day, lunchtime, I'm 7 in the second grade, I'm looking for my mom. They told me that she was in the lunchroom. So I happily skipped across the street and went into the auditorium, which is connected to the lunchroom. And my mom was there, and the ladies were talking, and I decided I would open the door and go into the auditorium, but it was dark. And then I quickly noticed the light coming from a machine, and it happened to be a movie projector. Something was playing on the screen. I continued to walk, and eventually I was near the machine and also near a priest sitting quite close to the machine, and he beckoned me to sit on his lap. And of course I did, because why would I not? He was Father. And so I sat on his lap, and I was so close to the machine, and I was actually remember being intrigued by it because of the sound and one wheel going around the other and the film going from one to another. And then in a moment, everything stopped, everything went black, and the priest had his fingers into my vagina, and I don't know how long, it seems like 10, 15 minutes in my mind. And then he walked me to the back of the auditorium, and he left me. And I went into a small bathroom there, and I washed my hands and I washed my hands. And even at age 7, I knew something very bad had happened. And I believe that's when I split in two. I left little Mary on the bathroom floor, and it took many, many years before I went back and reclaimed her and picked her up and said, you're okay now. And after that, I went into the lunchroom. Still today, it really touches me about that little child. I went into the lunchroom, but I didn't tell my mom. I didn't tell anyone. My saving grace, if there was one, and it has been, is I turned to God in my own little way. I already knew that God knew everything, my most secret thoughts, words, and deeds. And I became a life, that became a moment where I began a lifelong conversation with God, which exists today.
That's dreadful. I'm so sorry.
Thank you.
Mary, you're in an unfortunate position to be able to have this perspective that I'm wondering if you could talk about how the church's response to the issues of child sexual abuse, of abuse by nuns, and of nuns being abused. How is the church's take with each of these scandals? Has it been the same, or?
I think it's been the same in that there's a shroud of secrecy and a desire to protect themselves and the cover up and pass on predators, which is a great crime and a great sin to hurt and molest more children. I think that's how it's been handled mostly throughout the past decades. And it's just now that voices, like the story I read, the one that said, you know, this is it, this is my testimony, it's time for me to speak out. Just recently, persons are beginning to speak out. But again, in relationship to the non-abusive children, there has not been a word from religious orders and or the Vatican. So we see how covered up these crimes are and shrouded and continued in order, I believe, to protect the good name of the orders and of the church. And until those terrible tragedies can be faced, there can be no real change in the Catholic Church. You know, it's good to admit a problem, as perhaps we could say the Pope did by saying the priests, nuns were slaves of priests. But admitting a problem is far from solving it. It really is time for action. The Pope should, you know, take a stand and move to zero tolerance. And so should religious orders, if any are within their ranks, so to speak, are perpetrators. They should be sent away, defrocked, fired, whatever word you want to use. Because until that clean sweep, so to speak, is done, the church will continue to have that great big elephant in their room, in their closets, and it's just sad, isn't it? I'm getting very sad at this moment.
Yeah. Do you have a sense of why it seems that the issues with non-abuse have stayed in the darkness perhaps longer than some of these other scandals?
Well, I think women have had the role of always taking a back seat, and just by virtue of being women, often were the last to be addressed, to be heard. That's one piece. The other is this piece of clericalism where women in the church have been subservient to priests, to the bishop, and wouldn't dare speak out because of fear of retaliation, like in the story we heard earlier, the fear of not being believed. The nuns, the religious women of long ago, were brought up in such a way that we were humble, we didn't speak out. We were taught not to really stand up and speak out, but to be humble, to follow the rules, to be obedient, and especially to our pastor, the bishop, and the Pope. Those are some reasons. And again, the piece of what would we do if we started telling these stories? We would probably find that so many of us have been implicated in one way or another. Now, who wants to do that? So they have a lot to, the church, religious orders, and the world has a lot to do with coming to terms of how they, everyone has been a part of this in one way or another. But to move forward, it has to be done.
Hearing you talk about that, it's making me think about this hashtag, hashtag nuns too, which has been getting traction. And you were part of that, right?
Right. It's just so fascinating to me because it seems like it's at least a year ago. I must look back when one day I thought, well, I'm just going to start a hashtag. Like it was just like, well, I guess I can make a hashtag. So I, you know, followed all the directions and I called it nuns too. Well, through the months, what emerged surprised me in that I was really hoping for survivors of nun abuse and or nuns who were abused by priests. But by and large, it is voice after voice registering upset, concern. They're appalled with this piece of church of church action.
Well, and could we unpack that nuns to reference? Has the hashtag MeToo movement affected survivors of abuse in the church?
Yes, I think so very much, because I think the reason that I'm getting so many calls about survivors of nun abuse, besides being the contact for nun abuse, is that this group of survivors has never had its light of day. And I think they're saying, what about me? What about me? They want their stories to be heard. They want their day in the light. They even want settlements when possible and recompense. You know, some have had such tragic lives putting the pieces together. Alcoholism, drugs, unemployment. And this is not fair. And the church has a serious reckoning to do about that. And so do religious orders and other persons and groups that have molested and raped and cost people to live a lifetime of putting their life together and the pieces back together and healing and moving on to purpose and meaning.
So, Mary, could you talk about why you ultimately left the church?
Leaving the church was one of the most difficult things I did, because over half a century my life was involved in church, in ministry, in service. I was a principal, a national distinguished principal. I was appointed as director of the Pastoral Life Services Department by the bishops. And so it was no small thing for me to finally, probably I was about 56, 7 years old when I finally said the words, when people would always ask, are you still a Catholic? I finally was able to say, no, I am not a Catholic. And the reason was really twofold. Certainly, the way the church was handling abuse and survivors was a piece. And secondly, at the time that I was dealing with my priest abuse, I was also facing the fact that my affection and love was for and with women. And I was so naive. I was still directing the Pastoral Life Service Department at that time of coming out. And I thought they would be happy for me. Now, that was very naive. But I really believed what they taught me, which is we are made in the image and likeness of God, and that the greatest work we have to do in our lives is to be who we are, like the glory of God, are we fully alive. So, you know, I believe that, and I believe it too today. So I was like thrilled, and I started my coming out, started telling my colleagues, and eventually the message got to the bishop. And the end of that particular work year, I was fired. And eventually I got to see him, and I told him this was not fair, that this was my church as much as his church, and that he owed me the right to be a part of this struggle and journey around sexuality and embracing the different ways we love in the world, and that God is a part of that. And that's when my world fell apart, when he told me by coming out and speaking out about that, I was featured in a piece on coming out, that I broke allegiance with the Catholic Church. That's when I really felt a great big whammy. I felt betrayed. I felt, again, abuse upon abuse. And that is when I said, this church doesn't fit for me anymore. There's no place for me. There's no place for my love. There's no place to be married or blessed. And it's still, I wish it were differently, and it isn't. And I understand that churches can define who they are, but it doesn't mean it's right. And so I've worked hard for that too, for marriage equality and for survivors to heal. And I'd like to say to survivors, you're not alone. And I'd like to say to men and men who love men, women who love women, you're not alone. And transgender men and women, you're not alone. And someday, maybe, just maybe, you may be welcome in all churches.
And even without the church, you still have that dialogue with God.
Oh, absolutely. I would be lost without God. God for me is many things, including energy, love. Shows up in you, shows up in me. And that kind of understanding of God is my stronghold, gives me comfort. It helps me with courage to move forward. And God is my salvation and my rock.
Mary Dispenza is a former nun. She's the national leader of Survivors Network of Those Abused by Priests, or SNAP, and the nun abuse contact for the organization. She's the survivor of child sex abuse by a priest and abuse by a nun. Mary, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you. It's an honor.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.